Welcome to the Leadership Intelligence Podcast. The title of today's session is The Value of Your Employee Value Proposition. My name is Charles Rogel, and I am the Vice President of Products and Marketing here at DecisionWise. Our presenter today is Kristen Chapman.
Good afternoon, Charles.
Kristen is a principal consultant at DecisionWise, and she leads a team of consultants responsible for leadership and organizational assessment, data analytics, and change strategies for clients around the world. Kristen has coupled her educational background in cultural anthropology and a master's of business administration with 15 years of experience in team startups and turnarounds. She works regularly with organizations on how their culture impacts their ability to attract, retain, and engage employees. So again, our topic is the value of your employee value proposition. And my first question for you, Kristen, is why this particular topic? What's so valuable about your employee value proposition?
Why is it so valuable? There's a number of reasons. Primarily, we're at a point in our, I guess you could say, our history, our market or employment history, where the number of jobs predicted to be available will be greater than employees to fill them. And so when we think about each organization or business's need to have skilled workers, to have people who can be competent and provide great services and products to customers, that really becomes something that will be on the mind of every employer.
Yeah. So the benefit is really to attract and retain your best employees. If you have your employee value proposition in place, you're better positioned to make that happen.
Yes, never in our time history has there been that need to for the employer to consider so much the employee's experience. And so yes, it's about how do we attract and retain as well as motivate employees within our organization.
So tell us what you're going to talk about today. What's kind of the agenda?
Well, we want to talk about what EVP actually is. So we'll talk about some working definitions and give mm-hmm. some working definitions. We'll also talk about why does it even matter? You know, why do we care about it? And we hit on that a little bit, but we'll go into some more detail. And then also, how do you identify your own EVP within your organization? And we'll talk really specifically about the methodology that we follow in order to understand that when we work with our clients.
Great. So let's start off with the definition then.
Employee value proposition, really, it comes down, I mean, there's a lot of definitions floating out there, but for me, it comes down to the value an employee receives from an organization in exchange for the employee's work. And so when we talk about the word value, mm-hmm. The general sense of it is its usefulness or importance. But when we take it from the perspective of the employee, a value is really a fair return or equivalent in goods, services, or money or other for something exchanged. So we're really thinking about what is it that the employee is receiving in exchange for their work. Their work is, you know, can be defined as the skills, the capabilities, their experiences that they bring to the organization.
So it's kind of everything that the employee perceives as valuable to their employment, not just their paycheck.
Exactly. And at DecisionWise, we talk a lot about different contracts that the employee has. So mm-hmm. the job contract or kind of the transactional contract, which is really what you said, that pay and benefits, the safety, those types of very kind of tangible things. Mm-hmm. We talk about the brand contract, and that's where EVP really comes in. So the brand contract addresses what do you as an organization outwardly profess to be?
Okay.
And so we want to look at that and see, does that align with what employees or potential employees, what they see, does that align with what the experience actually is working
at your Are they really getting what you're selling?
Exactly. And that's important because people don't like this sense of dishonesty, and it may not even be intentional, but if you profess one thing, but yet you don't live up to that, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. People see through that. The other kind of contract is a psychological contract, and that's where we really get into engagement. It's things that really, what you're expecting when you go in to an organization, the meaning, autonomy, the growth, impact, connection, things we've talked about in other podcasts. But this brand contract is really the sum of what you expect your relationship to be with the organization based on what the company outwardly professes. Mm-hmm. For example, what it's like to work for Google. is something that, you know, as the top company to work for.
It's kind of legendary, right? Everyone aspires to say, oh, that'd be cool to work there. They do all kinds of fun stuff.
Right. So what is that brand that they're professing? And then as an employee being hired into Google, how is my experience in that?
Mm-hmm.
And so companies who understand this well, they look for different ways, ways to differentiate from their competitors in order to stay competitive and attracting talent. But there's also this component of retaining. And so mm-hmm. the factors that attract someone initially to a company may be different than what's important to them in their experience in retaining. And we'll talk about that as we progress.
Okay. So then why does it matter?
Sure. So one question before we jump into that, one question I often ask my clients is, does your organization have an employee value proposition? So you know, Charles, many of our clients that we work with. What do you think? Do most of our clients have an EVP?
Well, I'm not sure. I had never walked into their doors and seen it written on the wall necessarily. I imagine most would profess that they do. Uh-huh. But I don't know if they all would agree with that.
Okay. So this is something that I ask, and often, you know, I get some mixed results. Some say, yes, we do. Others say no. But really what the point of this question is to say that every organization does have an EVP, whether they choose to call it that or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever an employee or a potential employee reads news about the company, looks at their website, applies for a job, talks with someone who works at the company currently or used to, or as you mentioned, when you walk into their office or retail stores, you know, each organization gives us a first impression and gives us a glimpse into their culture, what they value, and ultimately how they view their employees. So whether they formally say we have an EVP or not, every organization does.
Well, and your employees would know what it is. They could describe it to you in their terms, right? What's important to them.
And where it becomes really interesting is perhaps what you state or what you think as maybe a senior leadership team is your EVP maybe different from what employees not only value, but what they
perceive it.
What they are experiencing as part of your organization.
Okay.
So why does it matter? EVP matters because the primary purpose of a business is to maximize profits. And so you'd say, okay, well, how are we making that connection, Kristen? Well, really, with the evolution of the knowledge worker, you know, it is closely tied to the company's ability to maximize profits. So when we think about a purely capitalistic view, you know, when Charles, you and I both did our MBA, and, you know, the whole conversation started with what is the purpose of a business? And again, it was to maximize profit for shareholders. Like, we heard that however many times, right?
Uh-huh.
But, you know, in the 1950s, Peter Drucker had a perspective that sort of evolved this a little bit. And he said, the sole purpose of the business is to create a customer.
Huh.
And so the idea of a customer being the one who buys the product or service, that's really where your focus should be. And so I think it kind of created this evolution of the customer experience and you know, really satisfying the customer. But that's even evolved further because we know now that to have a good customer experience, it's tied to having good employees. And so to attract the best employees, you have to support a good employee experience. And so today's view, really, the way we might define the purpose of a business is to maximize profits for its owners or stakeholders, which again includes shareholders, not just shareholders now, but while maintaining corporate responsibility. And so you can see that is more of something that employees or organizations are looking at. How do we maximize our profits, but not at the expense of our employees, of our customers, and even our corporate social responsibility in the community and the world we live?
Sure.
So we talked earlier about this idea that there are the facts showing us that there are more jobs than workers to fill them. It's predicted around 2019 that we'll actually have more job openings than people.
Mm-hmm.
But even right now, what we're finding is that there's a huge skills gap. So according to a study by the Corporate Executive Board, about 30 people apply on average to every job that's available. And of those applicants, only about 20% meet the qualifications for the job. And so I think this points to something really important, again, that underscores the importance of EVP, the value of EVP, is that, to find the right skilled workers is a challenge. In fact, this same study talked about the average number of days a job posting remains available is actually increasing. So I think it used to be about 20 days.
Yeah.
Now it's in the 40s.
Wow.
Yeah. So again, attracting and retaining talent matters.
So let's talk about what EVP kind of addresses. What does it kind of solve for an organization?
Sure. So when we get down to the nitty gritty of it, there's really four key questions, and they are: what attracts people to our organization?
Mm-hmm.
What is valued? What is valuable to them in their decision to stay with any organization? And then how is our organization doing to retain these employees? So when we look at what attracts, what causes people to commit or is important in their decision to stay, and measure how the organization is doing, we look for what we call gaps and alignment mm-hmm. between what attracts, what they value, and then their actual experience with the organization. And we refer to these as expectation gaps or expectation symmetry. Expectation symmetry, a good example of that would be, the pictures that you see when you go to buy art at art.com and you see the picture of the big mountain and, you know, it's reflected in the lake below it and you uh-huh. see a perfect reflection.
Sure.
So that's what we would say is expectation symmetry, where what you as the organization profess to be outwardly, what you say your brand is, what's important to employees in their experience at your organization, plus how you're doing as the as an organization, that's where we get expectation symmetry. Let me give an example. I worked recently with an organization that is a technology organization, and something that they profess on their website is that that you have a chance to work on new and innovative technologies.
Sure.
And the chance to do work that really aligns with your skill set. So what we found is that was a top attractor. That was something that was extremely important to these engineers as they first started or as a reason why they came to that organization. Then we asked, how important is that in your decision to stay? Well, we have them rank order this. So they actually ranked that as maybe second or third, but still in the top five is important in their decision to stay. So it's really important that they feel like the work that they do aligns with their skills and abilities. And then we asked a question around, do you feel like the work you do on a day-to-day basis aligns with your long-term career goals? And we found out that in this situation that the scores were really high, I think in the 80% favorable. So
wow.
Meaning that over 80% of this group agreed or strongly agreed that yes, the work that they're doing on a daily basis aligns. So that's a great example of expectation symmetry, not only in what they profess to be in the attraction, what is important in their experience in staying in the organization, as well as what they are currently doing on a day-to-day basis.
Okay.
So the next piece that's important to consider is, the last question, these three: what attracts, what is important in their decision to stay, and how is your organization doing in this? We kind of bring together into this final question, what is our brand? So as an organization, what is our brand? Does what we profess align with what our top talent wants as well?
And it's an employer brand. So as an employer, what is your brand to these people you're hiring? Not necessarily your product brand.
Correct. And thank you. That's a very important distinction. It is. It's your employee brand or your employer brand to your employees. So again, that's kind of the key questions that we're looking at when we address employee value proposition. One thing to note that's important, there are a couple of ways that you have to approach this. So if you're an organization that is a professional services or some kind of service organization, or even where you have a product that you're manufacturing, you already know who your key talent groups are. And so you can come to, so our clients that we work with that already know that, they come to us with predefined segments. They say, okay, this group of people is really important to retain. And so that may be like the example I just gave, this tech company. There could be engineers, or even they may say female engineers are extremely important to us to attract and retain. Technicians are top performers, and they would know what those segments might look like based on certain demographic information. And so they can come to us with that, and we can look at those different groups. And with the employee value proposition, yes, there is a general employee value proposition, but what's really cool about this is you can start looking at what is the employee value proposition for an engineer, or what is an employee value proposition for a female engineer.
Okay.
So these segments become really important when we talk about EVP. Now, let's say that you're a company that, and a good example would be like a retail store with hourly employees. And I think, you know, I remember reading something about Starbucks where they tried to figure out what their employee value proposition was. That's where they don't, you don't have a clear segment identification already. And so, you know, some companies don't know what their key talent groups are, or the groups that they want to attract and retain. And so part of the process of EVP can be, you know, really digging into that and understanding that. And we've conducted that with some clients. We won't go into the details of that, but it is important to understand whether you know your segments or that's something that has to be identified through the EVP.
Okay. So what kind of examples can you share with us of companies and what their EVP might look like?
Yeah, so one of my favorite examples is REI. I'm a huge outdoor enthusiast. I live here in this, you know, this area because I came back to this area from Kansas to
You're Utah. Camping in Utah all the time?
Yes, I love it. In fact, you have the high mountains and then you have the southern, you know, Utah and all the national parks. And so REI is a place that I've always, you know, been interested in, a company I've always been interested in. And what is particularly interesting about REI is they're always on the top 100 places to work, and they have been since 1998. Mm-hmm. And so I followed them, you know, really through from my business school, undergraduate business school time frame till now. And I noted recently that their voluntary turnover rate is 6%, which is really low. According to the National Retail Association, the industry average is about 74%. So when you think about retail stores, you know, that's pretty substantial.
That's
it's something that you really as an employer would want to make sure that you are able to address and understand. I think REI has done a great job of this. And so, you know, tell me, Charles, I guess before I go into why I like REI, tell me what you think it might be like to work at REI.
So I haven't been in there for a while now, but I imagine if I was to work there, I would be able to grow a really long beard. And most likely they wouldn't care if I smelled a little bit from coming in from the outdoors
outside,
or something like that.
You could ride your bike to work.
Yeah, I'd really have to come up with some cool outdoorsy stories and adventures that I'd been on that I haven't been, and kind of incorporate that into my persona. Mm-hmm. But I imagine it would be a fun place to work with like-minded people who enjoyed the outdoors.
Yeah, yeah. So I think you hit it well. In fact, you know, you're not an employee. You've never been an employee of REI. You've been in the store a few times, but just from what you've observed, you know, that's the sort of brand you have in your mind about what it would be like to be an employee of REI.
Yeah.
If you go to their website, you see pictures of well-dressed people. Mm-hmm. So this idea of quality clothing, quality equipment, in the outdoors with a very personalized picture. So for example, you'll see a picture of a woman on a boat on a lake, and it says, this is Gloria, who's been a member since 2002. She's in the Everglades. So there's a personalization to it. They talk about the valuing quality and integrity. Their mission is, we inspire, educate, and outfit for a lifetime of adventure and stewardship. And so, you know, there's this sense, and when you look at their customer site, you see things like 100% satisfaction guarantee. We donate millions to support conservation efforts. Even, you know, on the contact page, it says, email us, then go outside, we'll take it from here. You know, it's this idea that, yeah, we're serious about business, but we also like to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And because we experience fun and the outdoors, we're the ones that are experts in telling you what equipment you need, what kind of clothing you might need in order to have a great experience outdoors as well. On their shareholder site, they have a stewardship report. They have REI in the community. And then more specifically, when you go to their website, if I was looking for a job there, you see words like casual, approachable, playful, collaborative, work hard, play hard.
You probably have to start a fire without matches too to get an interview or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know what their interview process is, but that would be interesting to understand. But visuals of people riding bikes in foreign countries and eating food together. So this togetherness, working hard as a team around a whiteboard, and they list out their competitive pay and benefits. So, you know, if you were doing that, if you saw that and go into REI, and were hired as an REI employee, you would expect your experience to be what you are viewing from all of those descriptors that I just shared. So, employee value proposition is, are you aligned based on what you profess to be as a brand, what your employees that you're attracting and retaining, what they value? Is there alignment or are there gaps? And that's what we're looking at.
So it seems like maybe we should kind of pause and describe maybe what EVP is not, because as you're talking, I think many people would say, well, that's basically just your culture or your mission. You know, we've kind of ironed out our mission and we think it's valuable to our employees, or maybe it's kind of a twist on employee engagement of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Good point. So EVP includes those, but it's not just those. So it's not only your culture, your vision, your mission, and your values. Mm-hmm. It's not only your perks or your formal benefits. Those are included in your EVP, but it's not that alone.
Okay.
And when we talk about employee engagement, it's really not about how do you engage people. It's really about how do you, you know, what is it that attracts and what is it that commits people? Engagement is a little bit different. I'm going to go back to that psychological contract that we talked about. It's really the key factors that attract and retain.
Yeah, and so engagement is more about the motivational forces that make people kind of do their best work, but EVP is really making sure the pieces are in place so you can be engaged.
So you can do that, right. And so engagement really is best measured with an engagement survey.
Okay.
Whereas EVP doesn't focus on that as much, even though there are components in there.
Some overlap.
Yeah, so definitely. So, I mean, there is overlap when you think of the drivers of engagement, meaning, you know, that relates to the mission and vision of the organization, autonomy, growth, you know, impact and connection. There are factors definitely in there. But really, you're focusing more on the attract and those key retention pieces. And engagement is something that you look at separately. So really what I want to talk about next is how to understand or identify your own employee value proposition. And I'll go through two phases that really get us when we work with organizations. When I've worked with organizations, it's a process of understanding first what is your current EVP. Mm-hmm. And like we talked about before, everybody has an EVP. You may just not know it. So discovering that and then testing it with employees. And then the second phase.
Well, and there are various shades of it, right? So it's going to be different for different groups of employees, as you were describing before. There's not just one. Is that right?
Yeah. So typically what we find is we can come create an overall employee value proposition.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of the second phase is you as an organization, how do you define that? Based on what is important in the attraction, what your employees are saying that their experience is, what they value. But you're right, it's really focused on the first phase is really focused on what is your current EVP.
Okay.
And then testing that with employees. So the first step would be to analyze existing data. And, you know, most organizations have onboarding data. They have exit surveys. There's a website that you've created as a company. And so going through your website and looking at it through the eyes of your current and potential employees that join our company section that I talked about for REI as an example. What is the mission? What are the values? What are the promises made on the website?
Okay.
And so understanding having, and also looking at the messaging that you have within the organization. What are your internal communications say? What is it that you put up on posters in the, you know, through in the break room? And so looking at existing information that you have. Then the second would be to conduct focus groups. And conducting focus groups, we want to make sure that we select people. This is just basic good, you know, focus group selection process, but segmenting the employee population in the right way. So if you do know those segments you mentioned, those key segments, then we would want to make sure that we bring in some of those groups to ask some good questions. And then also getting a cross-section of demographic groups. So making sure that you have good representation across gender, tenure, job level, age, you know, making sure you get a good cross-section. So that's just basics, focus group 101.
Logistics, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then also, if you do have cross-functional committees or groups within the organization that work on some of these issues, like some organizations I've worked with, they have a diversity and inclusion committee, mm-hmm. or they have a leadership committee that works on leadership strategies. So, you know, some of these cross-functional committees that might be relevant to the EVP, it's also good to talk with them.
So once you get all these people together, gathered in a focus group, what do you ask them?
Right. So just to clarify, we would have them in different focus groups. So typically we'd have a short 30-minute focus group with maybe 8 to 10 or more different groups.
Okay.
What you want to ask them is just really some very simple questions. What you don't want to lead them, you don't want to prompt them. And so they are questions such as, why did you come and work for the company, this company? How was it different than you expected, or how was it what you expected? So what are the positive or negative differences based on your initial perceptions of the company? What do you most value in a company for which you work? You know, mm-hmm. what's working, what's not working for you in this particular company? And so, and then another question that it seems pretty direct, but we often ask is, what would cause you to leave this company? and so, you know, just getting to the heart of with a few simple questions, it gets people talking and you get some really good information. And you use that information then for the third step, which is to conduct the company-wide survey.
Okay.
So there's different ways you can structure an EVP survey. The way that we find it works best is to ask about factors that attract, factors that are important in their decision to stay with a company, so the commitment factors, and then assessing whether the organization that they're working with is currently aligned on some of those factors. So it's really a mix of tangible and intangible, as we say, or formal or informal items or factors. So let me give you some examples, because that seemed like a bunch of didn't make sense stuff.
Very vague.
Big words, right? So for example, we will ask about job attributes. We like to put our surveys in general in frames of reference. Mm-hmm. So we will ask about what job attributes initially attracted you to a company, and what are the job attributes that you most value in your decision to stay at a company? And so, for example, we might talk about things like the work schedule. And then, you know, that is an example of kind of a formal, or it could be informal, tangible, item. Or we would ask about opportunities to make an impact. So again, that's something that's a little bit more informal and intangible. Challenging work assignments, the balance between work and personal life. These are all factors that really employees can identify in their day-to-day job experience. And so we want to ask about what were the things that initially attracted you, and what are the things that are important in your decision to stay. I gave that example earlier of the work aligns with my interests, talents, and skills. This is a job factor that the example I gave showed, not only the attraction, but also the commitment and the alignment was all there for this organization that I worked with. But I've had another experience where, you know, there was a promise of a work-life balance in the website. And when it came to actually, what we found is that's something that they really valued in an organization or in a job that they had. But when we looked at how the company was doing with that, we found that workload was really high. People were experiencing a lot of job stress. So again, there was a promise made
and then
a disconnect between what the employees were actually experiencing. So we talk also about job attributes, internal factors. So many of these are informal or kind of intangible. So it would be things like, some of these are kind of engagement factors too, but the quality of team members, the quality of the leader you work with, mutual respect and trust, ability to share ideas, independence. Some of those, again, will really vary based on the internal organization. This might be where you get into collaboration, which is a value of the organization.
Okay.
External factors would be things that might be more informal but tangible. So the reputation of the company, working within a specific industry. This is where we get into size or job security, physical working conditions, senior leadership team, corporate responsibility. There's a fun one that I have a story of. We worked with an organization that all of their exit data said the location that we're at is what turns me off to being here. Huh. So a lot of people left because they felt like the location was bad.
Was it dumpy or something? Or
well, I think it was just, it was a predominant cultural group that lived in that area. And so if you weren't from that cultural group, it was a little bit of an adjustment for people that were coming outside of that geographic area. But the HR was really concerned about this because, they're trying to attract people and needed to go outside of that geographic area to do so. So what we did is we asked about, is this something that is as an external factor, something that's an attraction factor or a commitment factor, and how do you like the location? And what we found is that, the data showed that over 75% love the location. And in fact, that it was actually a key attractor to some of your entry-level people.
Interesting.
That were a top talent group. So And part of was because in addition to the location, there was this sense of work hard, play hard, and it was the kind of location where you really could get outdoors and enjoy.
Oh, nice.
So sometimes what you think is different than what it actually the data shows, as we know. And so that's why not only looking at that, that in exit data and onboarding data, but also doing focus groups, conducting a survey is important. The last area that we want to measure in a company-wide survey would be the rewards. So they are, mostly formal and tangible. So we're talking everything from base pay to bonus to time off, wellness programs, any kind of perks or programs that you offer that really what we would call kind of those satisfaction components. They're not necessarily going to keep people long term. Well, pay would, of course, keep people long term.
Yeah.
But some golden of the perks handcuffs. And benefit perks and programs don't necessarily keep people long term, but they're part of what you look at in a job contract.
Sure.
So again, we're looking at what attracts, what's important, and how is the organization doing?
So once you've identified your current employee value proposition, what do you do next?
Yeah. So this is, really two moves into phase two. So you've looked at your current state, you see what your EVP is, and now you have to determine, where are those gaps and alignments, and what does the future EVP look like for you as an organization? You have to define, what is that perfect model? What is that perfect employee value proposition? So you have to look at this really from two lenses, Charles. So the employee lens, and I know you have done a lot of work and thought around this, but also the employer lens. Let's talk first about the employee lens. Really when you're looking through the employee lens, you're trying to understand what is the employee's experience within my organization. And so all this data that you've just gotten, that's really giving you that insight.
Mm-hmm.
You ask questions like what changes will make us more competitive? What will ensure that we continue to attract and do a better job attracting? How do we align what we promise with what we deliver? What are our employees really valuing? And so that employee lens is the first, lens you have to look at.
Sure.
It's also, though, critical and feasible that you really have to look at your employer lens, right? So what is feasible for you as the company to offer employees? You know, employees will want everything that's out there. And so how do you make that decision about what really is going to increase our ability to be competitive, to attract and retain people? And that's where, for example, when we work with organizations, we do a lot of, you know, analytics and statistical analysis around that to try to determine that. But that's really the question you're asking, not only from the employee experience, but also what's feasible for us as an organization. So are we providing the right experiences employees are asking for? What do we need to offer to attract and retain? And a lot of times it's easy to go right to the perks and benefits.
Right.
Yeah. So particularly in competitive industries such as technology, perks really are vital to attraction. And so, you know, you can't not think of them.
Kind of leads to a perks arm race, though, because you're always competing with the other technology company up the road to offer the same things.
Agreed. In fact, I call it, you know, it's kind of the keeping up with the Joneses sort of mentality.
Yeah.
But perks are easy. They're easy differentiators, so that's where we go first, right? They often, you know, they can cost money, of course, a new gym or offering dry cleaning or, you know, having a cafeteria installed in your company and offering free food. You know, those are easy differentiators, but they do cost money. But sometimes they're not the best differentiators for an organization to use either. And for a couple of reasons. So I mentioned the keeping up with the Joneses. You said the arms race. You know, you're never gonna quite be there.
Yeah.
And also when we look at when we talk a lot about engagement, for example, or in this case, as we're talking about what retains people long term, those are what we would consider satisfaction items.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're really not what's going to keep people long term. Again, they're important as you're looking at, okay, you, Charles, got a job offer from company A and company B, and that piece of paper kind of shows, okay, here are the benefits that this company offers compared to this company. And so, you know, they're important in that part of recruiting and attracting, but they're really not there for retention. One of the things that we like to talk about is the adaptation principle. So this idea that we adapt pretty quickly to the new, and then it becomes the norm, not the exception.
Yeah, and it's similar to this. We like to use this story about, well, this example of the rough-skinned newt, which is a little newt or salamander type thing that lives in North America, and it actually developed a toxin on its skin to avoid being eaten by the common garter snake, which liked to eat it. And so as this happened, the garter snake got more and more immune to this toxin that created that would kind of paralyze the snake for a little while. And so the newt, as it evolved, started producing more and more toxin. So now this arm race continued where this newt is producing way too much toxin that it normally needs. But it's only doing so because the common garter snake now is resistant to it still. And so they're continually battling this out.
That's a great example. Let me tell you another one that I worked with recently, a company I worked with recently. Several years ago, we did their first EVP, and even though we don't often recommend it, there were about four or five perks or rewards that they had discussed and were committed to doing. And so they wanted to put that on their EVP survey and ask employees, what is most important to you? Let's rank these. What would you value most? And so what we found from the data then is that they everybody wanted a gym. Okay, that was in the gym craze, right? So they built this company built this gym, and it's been available for the last few years. Well, we recently did their EVP again 3 years later to kind of assess it, particularly because this is, again, is a technology company where there's a lot of competition in the area, the geographic area where they are. And we asked them, okay, based on the most recent rewards that have been provided, perks that have been provided, what do you most value? Well, guess where the gym came in?
Probably fourth or something.
Yeah,
or
fifth, right? So it was what they said that they wanted, but it's really, you know, what they value it now that they have it is a lot
like,
lower.
I guess I'm not going to the gym as much as I thought I would.
Again, it's kind of a, you have to look at almost your cost-benefit analysis as an organization and decide. But really, it's one of those things that a lot of times what people say they want versus what they actually use or what they actually do. That if somebody can figure out how to measure that and figure that out, boy, we would have employees figured out.
It's like your kids when they don't know what they really want or say they want something and don't really want
it. And then they don't do it. They don't use it, right? Or don't do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, that's just something to keep in mind when it comes to the satisfaction or the perks. Okay, so again, as with any change, you know, as you're trying to decide where you focus your efforts, some items, some things that as part of your employee value proposition you can make, decide to move ahead with can be quick wins. And mm-hmm. so those are great. But a lot of times there are some longer term pieces and considerations you need to make, similar to as you know, data that you get back from any employee survey. But understanding again, you know, your ultimate goal as an employer is to develop an EVP that meets your target talents, needs, and desires, but also fits your long-term business strategy. So that's something important to consider. You know, if REI employees said, well, you know, we really value in a kind of inside environment with, a very predictable kind of experience as employees, you know, that would be, you know, probably not feasible or probable that would happen. But if that's the what employees are saying, and yet you provide an adventurous kind of outdoor mm-hmm. kind of experience, you really need to consider, do we want to change our EVP to meet these needs or not? And so that is something to consider. And really that's, as we talk about how you leverage your EVP, how do you change your EVP and the implications of doing so, that's a future webinar that we can discuss.
Yeah, so it's really understanding. So what we've talked about here is the importance of it, understanding it, and then learning what makes it unique and valuable for your organization.
Yeah. Know,
what employees are actually valuing from their employment with your company.
And, you know, EVP isn't something that just stays static. It's always changing. It's really a long-term commitment that the company has to make, and you measure and adjust it every few years. You have to keep an eye on the organization's current needs, another eye kind of on the future. What is it that people are asking? What are our competitors doing? How do we continue to stay relevant and unique to, you know, so we can attract good people? It's a great... EVP is a great kind of process to go through as an organization and to really identify. When you become clear with your EVP, it really impacts everything you do, your company initiatives, your recruiting, you're tying back, you know, those initiatives to what you know, what employees have said, and you're creating that kind of culture and environment where people really do want to be there. But you have to connect the dots, and that's part of what EVP does, is help you connect the dots for yourself and then help to project those in your brand and with your employees.
Well, Kristen, thanks very much, and thanks everyone for joining us on this podcast titled The Value of Your Employee Value Proposition. We look forward to having you join us on our next podcast.
Thanks, Charles.